Now, while Australia has been digesting the results of our federal election, Iran and the US have been making global news. Here's senior Iranian official Hossein Abdalyan on CNN earlier this week.
President Trump last night tweeted that if Iran wants to fight, it would be the end of Iran. What is your comment on that?
He's got no idea about the culture and mentality of the Iranian people. Trump wants to control us through tweets and threats. 4 years of Islamic revolution in Iran have shown that he cannot talk to Iran through threats. If he thinks by bringing in some aircraft carriers and bombers, he can take advantage of Iran and to force Iran to negotiate for an unequal position, he's wrong.
Now, that was from a CNN news report on the increasing tensions between Iran and the United States. It must be clear here that Tehran has just this week quadrupled its uranium enrichment production. So the question here is, are we heading for yet another war in the Persian Gulf region? Ambassador Paula Dobryansky is one of America's leading foreign policy strategists. She was Under Secretary of State for Global Affairs in the George W. Bush administration. And these days, she's a senior fellow at the Diplomacy Project at Harvard University's JFK Belfast Center for Science and International Affairs. Paula, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, tell us more about the U.S. sanctions and their impact on the Iranian economy.
Well, the sanctions, the primary sanctions, which were impacting the oil exports from Iran, and the secondary sanctions, if you will, the ones that were recently imposed targeting the metals industry, iron, steel, aluminum, copper, things such as that in that sector. In other words, the non-petroleum sector. These sanctions are having an impact. The fact of the matter is that the sanctions have definitely been targeted, and they've been successful in impacting and having what the administration calls its maximum pressure policy on Iran. And basically, when you look at what are the details of Iran's economy these days, the fact is that, first of all, the Iranian currency, the rial, is to a seven-month low. It's approximately about 150,000 to the dollar. There's also been a significant flight of foreign revenue. We've also, as a result of the sanctions, foreign investors have abandoned Iran's market. The IMF and the World Bank have also forecast a deepened recession. And then let me even mention, when you look at the data on the oil exports, it's plummeted from what was about 2.5 million barrels per day to under a million. So basically, it is having an impact on Iran's economy. And also, I would say that we're witnessing signs of that, not just because of the economy, but because of these kinds of threats that are emanating from Iran as well.
Yeah, but this maximum pressure that the administration is exerting on Iran, is this all about regime change in Tehran?
No, I don't see it as that. In fact, the fundamental purpose of the maximum pressure policy is to get Iran to alter its conduct. The fact of the matter is Iran, for some time, has sought to project its power throughout the Middle East, impact many of our allies, friends there, Israel, as well as other states in the Middle East. And then at the same time, it's also to impact its aggressive behavior, where you have Iran supporting a number of proxies, terrorists, its support for Hezbollah, its support for Hamas. And so in that sense, the fundamental goal here is not a regime change, but instead it is to get it to alter its
conduct. Okay, now you talk about these Iranian-backed Shia militias. They're causing mischief in the Persian Gulf. But aren't they also fighting the same Sunni jihadists that we in the West have been fighting? Julie Bishop, our former foreign minister, a few years ago went to Tehran, and this is what she said.
We have a common purpose with Iran in defeating Daesh and helping the Iraqi government. if Iran has information that will be of interest to us, if we have information that would be of interest to them in pursuing our common purpose of defeating Daesh, then that's an appropriate exchange.
That's former Foreign Minister Julie Bishop talking about why it's important for Western countries to have closer relations with Tehran to fight Islamic State and other Sunni jihadists. Now, that battle has been broadly won, Paula, as you well know, but nevertheless, is it a bit rich now getting worked up about these Shia militias when, in a way, they were our allies against the Sunni jihadists?
Well, let me first say, by the way, I have great respect for Julie Bishop. She, in my view, is a very outstanding foreign minister, and she's a friend, and I have great respect for her. On this issue, however, my view is, of course, the answer to your question about, you know, weren't we also fighting the same Sunni jihadists? The answer is yes. But the fact is that Iran's fundamental goal and objective has been fighting against Israel. It's been fighting against many of our Middle Eastern allies. And we know that it has been supporting and abetting very aggressive behavior, a terrorist network, and terrorism that, by the way, sidetracks from that commonality, as she had cited. You can't overlook that. So to try to find a common base, in this case, I see it as being very much overshadowed by the broad nature and broad goals and objectives that have been undertaken by Iran. And let me even add one more in the mix, and that is the fact that, of course, Iran has focused on deployment, if you will, of ballistic missiles, a development deployment of ballistic missiles. And that's very concerning for the Middle East as a whole.
So your critics would say that it's Trump's position that's provoking the Iranians. This is the former Obama official, Wendy Sherman, widely tipped to have been a Secretary of State if Hillary Clinton beat Trump in 2016. She warned, this is after the State Department withdrew U.S. personnel from Iraq. She said, quote, either the Trump administration is trying to goad Iran into war, or a war could come up by accident because of the administration's reckless policies.
Well, first, there are two parts to that. One, I do not see that the Trump administration is seeking to goad Iran into war. It's not in our interest. It's not in the interest of any country in the Middle East. And it certainly isn't in Iran's interest. The current types of steps that have been undertaken, it has been focused on a protection of our assets. Basically, we have to take actions and to protect our assets and protect our own national security interests. And I see it in that context, not goading war or not recklessness.
My guest is former Ambassador Paula Dobriansky from Harvard. She's a former U.S. Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs in the W. Bush administration. Paula, Zib Brzezinski, the former National Security Advisor to President Carter, who died about a year or so ago, he often said that, you know, the Iranians are very proud people and that there's always a danger that a hawkish US policy could intensify Iranian nationalism. That was his big thing. And obviously, we've seen in the course of the last 10 years a lot of street protests. The mullahs are unpopular, particularly among the younger Iranians. Is there a danger here that Washington's response might unite all those different groups in Iran behind those despised mullahs?
You know, Iranians are not only a very proud people, but I think it's also worth noting they have a very rich history and a very rich culture. I think one needs to make the important distinction about the pursuit of the administration's policy. There's a distinction between the approach and the outreach to the people and our support, the U.S. support for the Iranian people. And at the same time, that distinction between them and the mullahs. So first, I want to make that point, because I think that's an important point in the way in which policy has been crafted and the statements have been made. That distinction has always been put forth, because you can't talk about the people and these corrupt mullahs. The second is, I think the population is united, but not for the reason that you cited. Mm-hmm. Actually, they've been very united, and significantly we've seen protests in the street against the kind of rampant, massive corruption of the mullahs. And I think that one will see more of that because of the kind of inequality and discrepancy which has existed there and the egregious human rights abuses.
Yeah,
that's what I think is the challenge.
Why can't Washington just contain these rogue states like Iran and North Korea? I mean, on this program over the last 5 years, Paula, we've had some foreign policy realists whom you know or know of, John Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago, Steve Wart from Harvard, and their argument is that the lesson of Iraq in 2003 surely is that preventive war is fraught with the danger of unintended consequences, but they make the more profound point that containment and deterrence, although they can't work against jihadists who can run and hide, but rogue states are different. They have a mailing address. And if the mullahs, and indeed Kim for that matter in North Korea, they know that if they ever use WMD against US or US interests, that would guarantee massive retaliation, perhaps annihilation from the Americans. So what's wrong with the realist strategy of containing rogue states?
Well, you embedded in that question several questions. Let me take a moment to splice it a little bit. First, I do think it's worth noting there is a difference between North Korea and Iran. North Korea is a closed society and is economically strangulated or stressed. And clearly, North Korea and Kim Jong-un is totally dependent on the leverage that he has with nuclear weapons. In the case of Iran, when you contrast it, the economic situation, let's say prior to sanctions, even though the economy has really been squeezed and the sanctions are working, the economy is different. It's not as stressed in the case of North Korea. But you have here, as you cited, the issue of their dependency on proxies. So deterrence is a more difficult challenge. And clearly it is a more difficult challenge because it constitutes somewhat of a deterrence through indirect aggression on their part, aggression through a group of terrorists. So the first point is, because you talked about the issue of a preventative war, let me just say that, I wouldn't say that that had to be the case. Let's take a look at World War II, an example where there was a failure of a use of force and a failure to be more decisive up front. And we know what occurred thereafter and the sequencing of events. I would cite that as a flat, as you proposed, a kind of a flat lesson. I think there have been circumstances that show that one can make a case in a different direction. But if you will, let me go to your other. You basically said, well, what if they, with Kim and the mullahs know, about the use of weapons of mass destruction, would that guarantee massive retaliation? On one hand, my answer to you would be yes, but there's another thing here that I think is very important in this mix. And that is looking at the ability of our deterrence overall to deter the full range of their aggression, their bad behavior, not only in that one context. Because the answer to your question is yes. Would it guarantee, and perhaps annihilation from the Americans? But there's another element, and that's the element that I just cited.
Paul, it's great to have you on the program, and we look forward to seeing you in Perth later this year for the Australian-American Leadership Dialogue. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to coming to Australia.
That was Paula Dobrianski, a former Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs in the George W. Bush administration. She's now at Harvard University. You're an RN.